Welcome, everyone, to Tales from Planet Customer Experience. As always, my name is Brian Bruner.
And I'm Deliana Pavlova, and we're a couple of customer experience geeks who love sharing stories about customer experience. Today, we have a special guest, someone that I've personally had the pleasure of working with and learning from in the CX space. I'm very excited because it's another international guest. Daniel, who's our guest, happened to post a story on his LinkedIn account a few months ago that I thought was a perfect fit for our podcast. And I was so excited when he agreed to be our guest. So Daniel, welcome to the podcast and being here and graciously sharing the story with the mobility company, I think it is.
Thanks for having me, Deliana and Brian. Hi. For those who don't know me, I'm Daniel Möllerhen. I'm a customer strategy advisor based out of Frankfurt, Germany. I've been in the field for more than a decade and helped about 100 companies deploying the Net Promoter System and all the routines that come with it. With that as a backpack, I observe myself in making experiences from a bit of a third-person view. So I observe how other companies are treating me, how other providers are treating me and my beloved ones. And the story that Deliana picked up on is about a mobility company that's actually sort of producing cars and bringing them out in the market. And what really intrigued me about this company and about their offering, and also my wife, who was very interested, is their concept of subscription, subscribing to the car. You can be very flexible. You can sort of log on and log off on a monthly basis. You get a car delivered to your house, or you pick it up from one of their pickup stations, and you can let go of it a few months later when you either don't need a car anymore or when you moved on to another more permanent sort of mode of transport. And also along the way, they allow you to rent out the car to people in your neighborhood, to people that are also subscribing to the service. And that really intrigued me from an innovative service or product perspective. So one ingredient that I like seeing in my professional career, a good product or service, was here very well present. And that made us subscribing to the service in the first place. And that's a bit what we would like to talk about today.
Awesome. I love this, especially because I think we haven't had a ton of stories from, you know, the innovation space. So I love to talk more about kind of how that experience unfolded. I know it had some hiccups, so let's talk about that. And then I know there was some service recovery, and I really love to kind of go through end to end what that felt like for you.
So let me tell you a little bit about the onboarding journey with the subscription service. Like I said, in the first place, it was a great product, innovative product or service attached to it, and everything went online. So they basically make you downloading the app to order the car. There's no physical interface. There's no phone interface before. Everything goes through the app. So really, if you want to sign up for the service, you authenticate, you identify yourself on their app, you upload your driver's license, and you order the car with about 6 to 8 weeks of lead time. Sometimes it goes faster. Sometimes it goes a little, takes a little longer. So you order the car on the app, and then you basically basically schedule a handover time, date, and location. And it's meant to be to your doorstep. That doesn't always work depending on where you are in the country and depending on, you know, the service model in your country. So for us, it was picking it up from a location about an hour and a half away from our home. And they scheduled a sort of handover time in this location. And from looking at Google Maps, the address they gave to us looked a little bit strange, because you would expect some sort of dealership. You would expect some sort of office in an inner city environment close to a train station. But what they gave us, especially my wife was about to pick it up, is an address somewhere in the suburbs of a bigger city. And the building from Google Maps looked like an office building from the 60s that was sort of abandoned. So it didn't really look like a modern sort of car or digital native company. Well, of course, you know, we only wanted to go there, or my wife only wanted to go there to pick up the car and not spend hours in that building. So she was okay with that. Now, the date approached for the first attempt to collect the car, and about 24 to 48 48 hours or a day or two before, they canceled that and said that the car wasn't delivered to that location, or they weren't able to deliver it to the location, and they needed to schedule a new date. Of course, when you subscribe to a car, you kind of plan with having it at some point. Otherwise, you know, you let go of your old mode of transport. For us, it was a leasing car that went out of the lease. We didn't have another mode of transport, so we were sort of dependent on having this car at some point. And also, we have two small kids, so for us, the date was really important. And I guess for many other people, it's also important to be able to plan with, you know, when do they have their individual mode of transport back.
And I'm assuming you're also planning, you know, a way of getting to the pickup location, right? So you have to plan, like you were saying, maybe it wasn't close to a train station, or you have to plan somehow to get there to pick it up, right?
Well, of course. And, you know, depending on what your family situation is, whether you're single or not, for us, we had to take care of two kids while my wife was about to pick up the car. And she could only do that in person because she was the main subscriber to the car. So she needed to go. I needed to take care of the kids. And for that date, we actually planned it that way. Our kids are 2 and 4, right? So you cannot just leave them at home for a couple of hours. That doesn't really work. So we planned for that day, and they had to reschedule a day before. That's okay. You know, things go wrong. Sometimes in the scheduling and when things need to move, physical things, things might go wrong. So that's okay. Now, the second attempt was about 10 days later, which I found quite strange that it was 10 days later and not 2 days later. So the second attempt, 10 days later, same location. It was a Friday afternoon, around 5-ish, at a time of year when it's almost dark over here in Germany. So my wife went on to this location. Again, I took care of the kids, couldn't go with her. And she arrived at the location about half an hour before the actual meeting was scheduled, only to find out that the car wasn't going to be there. That nobody was going to be at the location. They sent her a text message saying that, again, for logistical reasons, they couldn't deliver the car. Somebody got stuck in a traffic jam, and they couldn't deliver the actual vehicle to the location. Now, again, you would expect that in the location, they probably have 1, 2, or 3 cars, and they just gave you another one until you might have to exchange them again. But since that location wasn't really a dealership, nobody was there. It was a Friday afternoon after 5 o'clock in a suburb area of a major German city, not really dangerous, but not in the inner city, not in an area where you would expect car dealerships, some sort of a suburb, and in the middle of winter in a way. And she waited there for about an hour until the whole situation sort of cleared up, and that they suggested to have a new date somewhat later. And then, of course, she went back to the main train station and traveled home. That whole trip took about 6 hours without coming home with the car. Now, that was the point when we started complaining about it, right? So she complained even before that on the customer service line. Nobody really took action. Actually, the service people, the service reps told her that they couldn't deliver it, then sometimes these things go wrong. And along the way, they also threw their provider for the delivery under the bus. So they mentioned to us who the outsourcing provider for delivery of these cars was. I'm like, why? Why would you tell a customer that you outsource that to another company? And you actually mentioned the name of the company to also throw them under the bus. Nobody knows where the problem in the process really was. Now, they did that. And then, of course, they offered another day, like 10 days later again. And this time around, again, my wife was supposed to travel to this location. And that's when I started using my LinkedIn sort of audience, a couple of thousand, not many, but a couple of thousand, and wrote the story about what happened. And I actually sort of linked in the company and linked in the CEO of the company when writing the story, because I think that should have been a CEO topic if, you know, a customer was been put off twice, and along the way they also made a young woman coming to a strange location. Again, not inner city Apple store like, right? It was suburb and dark in the middle of winter, and not be able to deliver the car, and then also throw the provider under the bus who was supposed to do that. Now, within a couple of hours, the CEO responded, which is very nice, right? I would expect that, but not every CEO or not every senior executive does that. So the CEO responded once on the LinkedIn post saying that he was sorry what happened. And then, of course, this whole delivery that took place a few days later had some very special attention. We didn't feel it in the actual moment. So they then offered to deliver the car to our house and not made us go to that location again. And I asked my wife when she got the car delivered to ask the person who delivered it whether there was anything special this time around. And the driver said that, yeah, he could feel something was strange in the positive sense. So there were so many people checking on him, checking when he left sort of the station with the car, whether there was any traffic jam along the way, what his expected delivery date was, and also why when he arrived, whether he arrived, whether he met my wife, whether everything was fine. So there were so many messages in the background, apparently, that made sure that this time around it worked well. So great story of recovery eventually. But it took a little bit of a public announcement to make that happen. And again, the CEO took quick action. He was very tentative to the post, and that was fine eventually. The product, the car is great. We like it. We actually were really sort of happy, and our expectations were fulfilled on the product itself, but the delivery process was just awful.
So I have mixed feelings about this, as it sounds like you do as well. On the one hand, I'm impressed that, a customer would, see that comment, that the CEO himself in this case was, willing to reach out to you. I mean, not every company can or will do that. But on the flip side, why did it take all of this? Because you had already complained about it. You had already, tried to escalate it. And yet it took, something like this. And obviously someone was monitoring the CEO's LinkedIn and said, hey, you might want to go take a look at this. And again, the fact that they responded is impressive, but it calls into question, how ingrained is the service that they're able to do, and the fact that even on the second attempt that the person said it feels like there's something different about it because I was being more monitored, and of course you want that, maybe you don't want that every single time, but there should be a sense of, hey, this is important, and that something is being monitored for that.
Yeah. So Brian, let me offer from my professional viewpoint a few observations and best practice and worst practices in this example. So first of all, this was the first company I actually put out on LinkedIn talking about my experience. I actually, on a negative way, I did that with a few positive experiences over the last years. They did also went a little viral, which is great to also have the good companies. But this is the first time I did on the constructive side. And the reason I did it is because there was no escalation mechanism for the customer, my wife, in the process. And I would advise every company to have an escalation line that when the second delivery went wrong, make sure that customers don't go to social media in the first place, but they call your escalation line. Some companies call it high attention line. Some companies call it SWAT line. Some companies call it, very important person or whatever line, or the complaint line, but offer customers a line or a way to escalate topics to a higher level, or do it yourself. When you recognize that the second delivery was about to fail, this process should have gotten off the rail, off the standard rail, and should have gotten to the elevated rail in customer service that it deserves. Now, the other element, I must say, and Diljana and I recently in our loyalty forum heard about that, companies with bad customer experience also have bad luck. And this is actually a quote from one of the customer experience executives in our forum. And here, this happened to this company too. Because I went public with it, there were lots of people complaining about similar experiences from my country and from other countries. And after about 20 posts that almost sort of flipped the tone of the whole conversation, went from constructive to aggressive to blaming, I actually stopped the function of being able to comment on the post because this was not my intention. But you can clearly see if you don't have your customer experience under control, you also have bad luck. And some of these things make it to the press, to the traditional press, to the traditional media, where hundreds of thousands or millions of people are reading or watching it. So I must advise companies to have this escalation line to make sure people are not posting on social media, that this doesn't go viral, that they're not feeling the bad luck, but also make sure your customer experience is, up to the mark in the first place. Now, this is the onboarding journey. And for me, it doesn't really end there. To be honest, there was one more aspect that I would like to highlight as part of this conversation today. Now, of course, onboarding journeys typically end with the delivery of the product or service, And they sometimes stretch all the way to the first invoice, to the first bill. And that went all smooth. It went into the app. That was fine. Now, a few months later, literally a few months, and just remember, this is a subscription service where clients or customers usually take the subscription of the car. Maybe their average time is about 6 months, I would say, maybe a little longer, maybe a little less, because you don't go there if you can lease a car for 2-3 years or if you own a car for a longer period. You only go there if you want something that is slightly longer than a rental. And a slightly longer than a rental to me would be 6 months or so. Probably it's longer with them, but you know, roughly 6 months. Now, about 3 months after delivery, they send us a paper, hard copy, printed survey, an onboarding feedback survey 3 months after the fact. And it was paper, it was eight pages, asking me everything and anything about our household, about our car ownership, about the car we got delivered, and about all the experiences along the way. It literally started off with asking, was this type, was it a sedan, a station wagon, a convertible, a SUV, a van, or something in between? And I must say, the company I'm referring to, they only have one model at the moment, literally one model. And they don't have variations to the model. It's the one. And then also, the second question was about the engine. Is it a internal combustion engine, a hybrid, a fully electric, or something in between? This company only does hybrid. So really, it is the one type of car with the one engine. And of course, they know that the person, the subscriber, is driving the car because we only had one driver registered to the car. So literally, they had quite a lot of information that they shouldn't have asked us, right? They also asked about when the delivery took place, how many attempts it needed for it to pick up, and all these kind of things, where I say, look, a general principle in survey design is, don't ask stuff that you should know. And if you should know and you don't, still don't ask, right? Because you're showing your customer that you actually have no clue. And then, of course, I mentioned everything before was in the app. Like literally, there wasn't even a phone line that we could call for real, only in some certain circumstances. Everything was in the app. Everything was digital. Nothing was paperwork. And now comes the survey with 8 pages in paperwork that we were supposed to fill out and then send back via mail.
I'm curious about that. I have some questions, right? As a researcher, the first thing I'm wondering is, I don't know in how many company, how many countries the company operates, but could this be a case of like a global survey that was sent, you know, in the local market where, you know, these kinds of cars and engines are not provided? Or is this like truly kind of more blatant oversight and disconnect between the research and, you know, the customer experience? I don't know if you have an insight in that, but I'm curious if that played a role.
I don't want to throw another company under the bus, but the company designing the research was a very well-renowned company in customer research or in market research. So that in itself also, to me, raises some questions. Why do they do it that way? The research was in German, so it was clearly targeted at the German market. There was a letter up front from the car subscription company. So it was personalized to my wife. It also had a login name and a password. And at the very bottom of the printout, you could go to a bit of a cryptic address URL. And then the page that opens looked like from 95. Right, you didn't really see that this is a research for car owners, and then you would have to type in a 10-digit number code and an 8-digit alphanumeric code for your password, and you could have probably done it online. But so the researcher has probably designed that for many car makers, right? And then they printed it 100,000 times, but what they really got is a very, very little response because we did not fill it in. Because, you know, everything was digital before, quite a few information they had available. Half of the question was not relevant because it was a subscription model and you don't talk about sort of longer term maintenance and these kind of things if you have a subscription model. So clearly the survey was not tailored to the company that supplied the car to us, but it should have. And the company should have done that in the app where they actually make you log on once a week, roughly, or even more often, because you check on the fuel of the car and some of the status information. It's in the same app, which is great, by the way, to have it in the app. But then also interface with your customers on the app if you want to do that. Now, I guess, you know, if you really want to put an end to the story, and I think we want to tell it end to end today, and since we are recording at the time when we've had the car for about 7 or 8 months, so we are just over the 6 month period, and we actually are going to return it because we're going for a longer term lease on a fully electric car now. My wife has decided to go for a new one that she likes very much, and it's going to be here in about 4 weeks from now. So we canceled the subscription, which you can do with about 3 to 4 weeks notice. And just yesterday, she told me that she canceled on the weekend, and that, you know, everything she hears from this company is some sort of strange. So she gets a confirmation for the cancellation that took place that has a URL, a link in there to include more information about the return of the car. But when she clicks on the link, there is a failure message on the webpage. So she cannot go there. So she has to contact again to sort of align on the return of the car and the exact details. So it also looks to me like the end-to-end journey there isn't taken completely care of. And I think we all learned over the years that a cancellation or a churning customer is essentially the start of a new customer life cycle. When it comes to cars, when it comes to mobile phones, when it comes to other service businesses, if you deliver a great experience upon churning, people will reconsider to come back to you after a while. Sometimes it's 12 months, sometimes it's 24 months or a little longer. And I think that churn experience that is not coming to an end yet, right, already tells us we might not consider going back when the lease is over of the new car.
And this is perfect kind of segue into my last question that I wanted to ask you, kind of having gone through all of these experiences from the negative onboarding experiences, and then you had some pretty positive recovery experience, right? Like I think the CEO personally kind of responding and giving attention to this was a big, you know, high in the experience. But it sounds like overall the end-to-end journey, I'm curious, where are you now?
So I'm nuanced here because of, you know, also my professional background. I observe with a little bit more detail. But my wife is also on the fence, I would say. She likes the car. It's a good product. It's reliable. It was in a very well condition when we got it. It was about, I would say, 8 weeks old when we got it. So somebody had it before us, but very new. It was a good product, or is a good product and experience with it. She also disliked the onboarding journey and everything that happened along the way. And I must say she's very modest. Huh? So she's not complaining a lot about these kind of things. She's actually appreciating, but this one really, really pissed her off, to put it in nice words. Huh? And make no mistake, she's going to tell her friends and family about it, and did already, and so do I. But what the story we tell is rather nuanced, because we appreciate all the thinking that went into the product, also that you can rent it out to neighbors without any sort of, with peace of mind. You don't have to take care of it. You just park it outside your house. People can take it. You get the payment a little while afterwards on your bank account. That's super, right? The product is great. But we also comment about the adjacent journey experiences that weren't so great. And she was also, I must say, almost shocked by this feedback survey that we received. And again, she's a very modest person, so she's really like, okay, this is a bit strange. But here she was like, what have they smoked? Something's going wrong with this survey. I will never take that.
Really curious choice to me that a company that's anchored in innovation and their product, and right, you talk about the app, the experience, everything, that that's, to me, right, like there's huge disconnect. The research part seems like an afterthought. It's really not aligned with their value proposition, with kind of what they want to stand for. It seems completely disconnected.
And I think, again, to our forum conversations, Diljana, it's about customer journey management end to end. And when you design a customer journey, also think about how to collect the feedback. Because in this onboarding journey, and while having people on the app from the start, right, having people on your digital interface from the start, as a company, you would be able to collect feedback along the way. You would be able to collect feedback upon scheduling the delivery. You would be able to collect feedback upon a delivery that didn't work or a pickup that didn't work. You don't have to wait a few months longer before you raise your first feedback questions. You could do that right on the first day or within the first week. because something might have gone wrong in the first couple of days, and then with the server you push into the app, you would know immediately. And then again, because you have people on the app, which is a great sort of situation, other companies would love to have that 100% of customers on their app. And you can also push surveys like 3 months later, 6 months later, all these kind of things. So really design it into the customer journeys and products that you deliver would be my advice here.
For sure. Great story. I love it. I thought this was such a perfect case study and customer experience in so many ways. So thanks, Daniel, for joining us, sharing the story. I definitely enjoyed it, and we appreciate you joining us.
No, thank you very much for listening. And I guess learn from the mistakes of others would be one of the things I take away from this story.
Well said. Well said. Diliana, anything else you want to add before we end?
No, not for me. Again, appreciate the conversation. Always enjoy talking about CX principles with like-minded people. And thank you both for being here.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And as always, if you have a story that you'd like to share with us on the podcast, either coming on the podcast or you can send it to us and we'll read it and talk about it, send a message to planetcustomerexperience@gmail.com. And we'll take a look and get back to you and hopefully share that here on the podcast. For everyone, have a great day and greetings from Planet Customer Experience.